This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we hear from two more candidates running for the state legislature. Coming up, Democrat John Fisher seeking the state house seat in the 61st district, which includes the city of Portage. But first, Mike Knopfs currently represents all of Calhoun County and a large section of Jackson County in the Michigan Senate. The Republican is seeking another four-year term in the 19th district. Mike Knopfs, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin by having you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and what you would like to do with another term in the Senate if you're reelected.
Well, I'm basically like the governor of Battle Creek boy. And he grew up in Battle Creek. I grew up in Battle Creek. I graduated from Battle Creek Central and went to Keller Community College. Went on to Spring Arbor College, got my bachelor's in management and human resources. And then I got into police work and did police work 5 years on a local level with the city police and the Marshall City Police and then the Sheriff's Department in Calhoun County. Then I went and got in the state police for 25 years and retired out of there and ran for politics. I was 10 years in the on the Calhoun County Board of Commissioners, 5 years as chair, and then served 3 2-year terms in the Michigan House. And actually, I served the last half of Mark Schauer's Senate term and then did a full term myself, which we're ending at the end of this year. And then I'm running for another 4 years. I love serving the people, as you can tell by my background. Love helping people as a police officer and doing the right things. And then this is just a higher level of steel community service.
You're the chairman of the Energy and Technology Committee in the Senate.
I am.
As Michigan goes forward, what sort of things should we be encouraging through the state's energy policy in terms of sources of energy that we'd like to see more of? What sort of things should we be encouraging people to explore?
Well, what we're doing and what we did back in 2008 when we wrote the current energy policy for the state of Michigan, we are encouraging and started out energy efficiency and optimization. It's better that you don't have to build new power plants that cost us all more. The more energy we can save and not utilize and still have our energy needs taken care of is a good thing. So we're going to continue to encourage that. And then we have had a renewable portfolio standard, 10% by 2015. We're going to meet that goal, it looks like. And right now I have a 37-member work group of all different diversity, of all different perspectives on energy, whether it be environmentalists, whether it be utilities, whether it be energy optimization people, whether it be renewable power people. We have been meeting all over the during the summer, and we're meeting again in another week, and we're starting to rewrite the 2008 law because parts of it are expiring.
Renewable energy portfolio standards now, you say we're going to meet 10%. Does that mean that we should be looking to do better than that beyond 2015?
Yeah, I think we need to continue to look at that and maybe expand it. What I'd like to do is come up with the, instead of calling it a renewable portfolio standard, I'd like to set a standard that's a clean energy standard. And that way we don't know what the future is, but if it meets a standard, then it will qualify. And I don't think anybody's against using clean energy for our energy needs.
Does the state need any tighter regulations on hydraulic fracturing or fracking to try to explore and extract natural gas?
I think the DEQ, DNR are doing a really good job with that. Obviously, it's at higher pressure nowadays than it has been. We've been using it in Michigan for 60 years, but not the pressure that currently you have the fracking going on 2 miles under the ground or into the earth. I think that we're still watching, monitoring, the other circumstances people bring to our attention and fracking in other states to see if it's truly happening the way, it's prescribed and the word on the street is that what's happening if you listen to some people's attitudes and opinions about it. Haven't found anything yet. Obviously, we need to stay on top of that. And if we see somewhere in the United States that hydraulic fracking is doing some bad or putting people in danger, we obviously then need to look at it and see what happened and try to take a recourse of action.
Let's look at maybe the other end of energy, which is our roads in Michigan. Once people travel on them, there's some wear and tear, and the governor has said we're going to need something probably north of $1 billion to really get the roads in shape. How would you want to do that if it were just solely up to Mike Knopfs?
Well, I think there are two things. Number one, I think I'd like to put it first of all out to the people, see if they pay a penny or 2 pennies more for the roads. If you're going to pay a penny
on the gas tax, on the gas tax, or do you want it somewhere else?
I just want a sales tax increase of 1% or 1 penny. Instead of 6 cents on every dollar for your taxes, it'd be 7. That 1 penny extra would be totally the responsibility and go towards the roads. Yeah, and that would generate about $1 billion.
But an increase in the sales tax on everything in the state?
Just... And everything we're currently paying. Instead of 6 cents, you'd pay 7 cents on the dollar for everything that you pay sales tax on. That would generate about $1 billion. People would decide that. If they don't want to do that, then obviously we'd have to look at another revenue source. So part of it would probably be a tax increase. I don't like registration fee increases. You can look at what some other states are doing in the way of... maybe another way, because you have a lot of electric vehicles coming up and alternative vehicles coming up who don't use gasoline as much. So maybe, you know, we put a dollar or two on tires when you buy your tires, maybe, or something like that. That would, you're using the roadway because you have an electric vehicle, you're not paying the tax. This would get some money from you for using the roads to keep the roads up so you have smooth roads.
What's your opposition to raising the cost of vehicle registration fees?
I you know, being out the district and talking to people, they, you know, are paying $150, $250, $300 already a year. They think that's high enough. They have a hard time affording that and getting that money together. And I think if you do a gas tax increase or, like I said, the tire tax, people could afford that once every 3 years or 4 years when you get tires.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Mike Knopfs. He's the state senator who currently represents all of Calhoun County and part of Jackson County. The Republican is seeking another four-year term, representing the 19th district. You are one of the few Republicans who voted against the right-to-work law, which is coming up now on about 2 years ago that it was passed.
Yep.
As you look back on it, is there anything that has made you think differently that this is going to be the best policy for Michigan going forward?
Not really. You know, it was kind of hard for me in that, first of all, if you look at other states that have right to work, they do have more jobs, but they're at $10 an hour, and people just can't raise a family on $10 an hour, you know, in my opinion. And so what I see is they may have more jobs, but they actually have more poverty. Their poverty rates are higher. If you look at Georgia, Mississippi, Arkansas, Alabama, you know, some of those, South Carolina, some of the right-to-work states, their poverty rates are a lot higher. And so that's why I voted against it, because I think that as employees, you need to have standing in the room when you are negotiating your contract with your employer. And I think it's worked well. If for some reason you don't feel that you need a union in your workshop, with the old law, you could 51% of you could vote to get rid of the union, or 51% of you could vote to go to a union if you weren't thought, or your group thought they weren't being treated fairly. So I think it needs a little bit more time. I think there are benefits on, you know, you, like I said, there would be probably, and there are more jobs, as we've seen in Michigan. $10, $11 an hour jobs are pretty tough to live on, though. So, you know, if you could get it where you're getting $19 or $15 to $19 an hour job, you know, you could raise a family and have a decent living. I think the middle class will be hurt a little bit by that as the wages go down, because you've lost your right to be able to speak up and negotiate for yourself.
Now, you say we do have some more jobs. Can we say with any certainty that that is linked to the right to work law?
No, it hasn't been shown that yet. I think a lot of things have happened. We've changed a lot of things in Michigan since this governor's been our governor for almost the last 4 years. We as a legislature have done some things that's made it better for job providers to come to Michigan and or stay in Michigan. And so and now we're working on regulations. You've seen the unemployment rate go down. I don't think that is, and I just talked to the MEA the other day, and they said in this last sign up, where you have to sign up to be a part of the MEA, and it's voluntary now because of the right to work state that we are. They've lost about 5,000 members, but you know, that isn't as much as probably people thought there would be out of, they got 150, 130,000. I don't think it's really taken full effect yet, so we really can't make a determination whether it's been good or bad. I personally think it's been bad. That's why I voted against it.
The state privatized the food service in prisons with the Aramark company, and there have been a series of problems since then. Regardless of what's going to happen with Aramark, let's look forward. There will probably be more proposals in the future to privatize services in some way in Michigan. When that comes to your desk, are there different standards or things, litmus tests perhaps, that you will have to say, yes, we can privatize that, or perhaps, no, that's one that we're not going to go forward with?
Well, being in law enforcement and a little bit of corrections and being in politics, I've read it was 10 or 15, maybe even 20 years ago when Kentucky and some of these others tried to privatize in their prisons these food services and other things. And being a former police officer, I always knew, and today is just showing once again with Aramark, that, you know, you do have more fraternizing going on with the staff and the inmates. You have more contraband getting in. you know, I think, and I told, and I voted against the contract and that budget for that reason. And I told other legislators and senators up there, I thought it was a mistake and that you're going to see these problems. And it hasn't even been a year, and here we're seeing the problems. They've tried it over and over again the last 20, 25 years in the corrections area. It just doesn't work. You need that state employee, that city employee, if you got a city lockup, that's committed to the agencies and, you know, is proud of the job they're doing, getting paid a decent wage. And I think you don't see as many problems. You will have problems from time to time, but not as many problems as with people who are making, again, $10 an hour doing food service, people offering money to get the contraband into the jail. They'll take it. Some people will take it. There's no loyalty there. It comes down to the dollar, and some people just don't have the right ethics and scruples to be able to handle that job and do it right.
Do you think that Michigan should revisit marijuana legislation at all? Should it be decriminalized or even legalized?
I don't think legalized. I think that maybe some form of decriminalization, you know, where it's a fine if you get caught and not jail time and putting people in jail for that, but maybe restricting or taking away their license if they're licensed in some occupation, you know, those type of sanctions on an individual. I do believe we got to loosen the laws, and I'm a big proponent of there are kids that need some of the oils and stuff, and they have seizures. I have some constituents in my district. Their kids are having seizures every day and about 100 times. And, you know, they say that some research has shown that the oils, and you put the oils on the children, that, in fact, the seizures will go way, way down, about 25 to 30, 40%. So
these are oils extracted from marijuana.
From marijuana, yeah. It's not like cookies and all that stuff, but it's actually the oils. And one father talked to me about a month ago, said, "Mike, I got to make a decision. Am I going to violate the law, or am I going to go out to Colorado to get the oils for my kid? But you know what? You'd do anything for your kids," which I would, within, you know, as long as it's somewhat, you know, not harmful to anyone else. But you know, I think that if they find that, I think we should, you know, do some trial basis of marijuana in different forms to be able to help individuals that have those types of physical ailments that marijuana oils would help. And there are some other issues I've learned just recently. So I'd be supportive of doing that in Michigan so they don't have to run to Colorado, get the oil, bring it back, so the kids don't have or have 25 or 30 less seizures a day. I think that's a valid concern we need to look at and allow some sort of prescription for that.
I've been asking candidates about term limits, and it seems mm-hmm. a very appropriate question to ask you. You're in a unique position where you have a chance to serve more than 8 years
right.
in the Michigan Senate and more than 14 years total
right.
In the legislature, which is the most people get these days.
Right.
Having seen that, do you think that there is some benefit to even just a couple more years of experience being in the legislature?
I do. You know, I voted for term limits. I thought it was the right thing to do. If you remember, originally the law that we passed as Michigan citizens was pertained to federal legislators as well. That got turned down by the U.S. Supreme Court. So now the only people that are term limited, not local officials, not federal officials, only state officials. And so I think we should revisit that, because in the House, when I got about 5 to 6 years in, I really knew what I was doing. You know, to be honest with you, there's a learning curve, and especially there's so many different issues in the way the system works that it took a while to engage that and learn how to work within that environment. Then going to the Senate, obviously, there are a few changes in the way we operate in the Senate as compared to the House. But again, I think you just get really solid. It's just like I always believed a trooper, because I was a post commander in charge of 32 troopers. When they got to 10 years, in between 7 years and 10 years in, they really got good, because they knew how to handle almost every situation. And then after that, it was just experience. And then, they even got better. And so I think there is something good to maybe expanding them just a little bit longer. A lot of people only get 6 years in the House because they run against another representative for the Senate. You know, there's only 38 senators, so everybody can't be a senator. So you only get 6 years, and you just get going, you feel good, and you just started to make some changes, and your political life is done. I think we should give them an opportunity. Everybody up there, probably 14 years would be a good idea, whether it be in the House or the Senate. You can still have the 14 years we have today, but I think letting them serve a total of 14, which would be seven two-year terms in the House, and doing 14 or 16 in the Senate, so you have four-year terms. I think that'd be enough.
Mike Knopfs, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Gordon.
State Senator Mike Knopfs is running for re-election in the 19th District, which includes all of Calhoun County and a large section of Jackson County in the Michigan Senate. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative in Michigan's 61st State House District next year. The current representative, Margaret O'Brien, is running for state Senate. The 61st District includes the city of Portage, and the Democratic nominee is John Fisher, who joins us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. My pleasure.
John Fisher, why don't you begin by telling the audience some more about yourself and what you would like to do if you are elected to the State House.
All right, well, let me make clear. The district is the city of Portage and then four townships, Schoolcraft, Perry, Round, Texas, and Oshtemo. And I'm a native of Portage. I have the distinct pleasure. I'm living in the house where I was born and raised. It's a house that my dad and his brother built. They did everything in it except the plastering. So I'm home, and it's really, really nice to have this unique opportunity. And I'm running because I do have a unique opportunity to serve my home, for which I have a great passion. I'm United Methodist minister, which means I've moved around a little bit, but that house on East Shore Drive has always been home, and the house I was responsible for since my mom's lived there all of my life. As a United Methodist minister, I've grown up as taking care of common people, and not just taking care of, but working with and helping common folks and helping various causes. And now I have this unique opportunity to take that experience to Lansing and work for the common good and be a voice for common folk, which I think has been lacking.
So give us some specific examples. When you say serve the common people or serve the common folk mm-hmm. in Lansing, what are some things that you would want to work on?
Well, one of the first things is looking at what common good means. And I learned about that when I was in Portage. I was one of the kids that was first involved in the very first Little League that came to Portage. I remember when the parents got together and said, look, we ought to have a Little League here for all the students that are coming along. Now, unfortunately, it was rather sexist. It was just the boys, and it took a while for that to get corrected. But the parents, the community leaders got together, the school and Upjohn donated land. Some of the farmers, my father included, brought their tractors over. We cleaned off property. We built the Little League diamonds. We put up backstops and fences and built dugouts. We even built a concession stand. And it was a group of people, some of which did not have children. We had a number of fellows who coached that didn't even have kids. But the community coming together for the common good.
How does that come from the state, though? What does the state do to mm-hmm. encourage that sort of thing?
Well, what we lost track of in the common good, infrastructure right now is the most obvious one. Roads are the visible. It was easily put off because, you know, it wasn't real a hot button issue, so nobody was paying much attention, but we all drive on the roads. But the roads are just a visible part of the common good. The rest of it are the water, the sewer, the utilities, environment. All these are common good. Same with education. Public schools are a huge part of the common good. And we've got to get back to fully investing and treating our schools with respect. Right now, politicians are making too much of their life on beating up on the public schools. And it's killing the ability of our students to learn because the staff and the schools are under such pressure and attack. And then the other one is the tax structure. The way it's set up now does not favor the common folk. The people with the least resources are having to pay the highest percentage into their taxes, and the people with the most resources are seeing their tax burden decrease. So we need to address that as well.
Well, let's start with roads. If it were up to you, where would the state come up with the money to repair and maintain the roads? And according to Governor Snyder, that's probably going to cost more than $1 billion. Where would you want to see that money come from?
It needs to be a broad approach on receiving the funds. Just raising the gas tax would not be wise, I don't think. Our gas tax is one of the higher in the region as it is. And if you raise particularly the tax on diesel fuel, the big trucks, which are causing most of the damage, would buy their gas someplace else, get their diesel fuel someplace else. So we have to look at a varied structure of getting that income, some type of fees. It should be the users that pay. So we have to find a way to recoup from the heavy truckers additional costs because they're causing the damage that's needing to be repaired. And if we increase the income or the gas tax, we also then need to offer some way of offsetting that for our lower income people who are really struggling to get to and from work as it is.
So do you favor increasing the gas tax at all, or would you rather not do that as part of a program?
That would be my last resort. It may be part of a package, but if we do that, having a specific package to me is not as important as having a guideline as to who benefits and who pays. Yeah, and this again gets back to the common good. People who are using the roads should be paying for the roads. Now, we all use the roads. I know there's a sense, some of these cars are so fuel efficient, we should burden them with a higher fee of some sort. Well, the lighter cars don't damage the roads that much. So that's not necessarily fair.
This is at WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with John Fisher, who's the Democratic candidate for State House in Michigan's 61st State House District. All right, let's go to schools. It sounds like you would like to put some more funding into education. Where would you get it?
Well, right now, if you're in charge of a public school and I open a charter school down the street, you have to provide transportation and you have to feed the kids. I don't have to do either of those. But you get the same per pupil fee as I do. That doesn't seem equitable. Also, if I am a parent and I come to you with my special needs child and you're in the public school, you have to educate them and bring the additional resources in that are necessary for that. Me with the charter school, I can say, I'm sorry, we're not set up for that. But you don't get any more money in the public school. We have to address those inequalities. And that would be one of the better places to start getting at some of the funds that the public schools need. Not to have just a flat rate per pupil, but look at what is the actual cost of this pupil going to be and adjust it accordingly. Or what are the things that the school is going to provide and adjust that. So I don't think a charter school who's not providing transportation and is not providing meals should get the same per pupil funding. Same with the new internet, the computer schools.
Virtual schools.
Yeah, the virtual schools. They shouldn't get the same per pupil. They don't have buildings.
Do you believe there is a place for charter schools and virtual schools in Michigan?
I am strongly in favor of public schools. And one of the dilemmas that we have with the charter and the virtual, particularly the charter, is it ends up with the public school being the school of last resort, and that is not healthy. Then it is just the students who can't move and the ones with more limited resources. I think charter schools may have had a place. I loved U High when it was here in town. But that was a special school set up as a lab school by the university. I don't think there's a place, or I don't think that it is helpful to have for-profit education. I think the greater good is better served by nonprofit education. So the charter schools that are set up for profit, I don't see those as helpful. Yeah, and there is a place for some computer use and perhaps virtual education. My son just got his master's degree online. So there is a place where those can be helpful. But we have to be very careful, because one of the most important things in education is the relationship between a teacher and the student. Yeah, and that's another problem we're having now is evaluation. Yeah, and we don't have a way of evaluating how well do, if you're a teacher, how well you relate to students. Yeah, and that's probably the most important thing you have to offer is your relationship.
So you mentioned wanting to reform tax structure at the beginning. Mm-hmm. If John Fisher got a blank slate and could redesign Michigan's tax system, what would it look like?
We would reinstitute the earned income tax credit. Even President Reagan saw that was one of the best things that we'd ever done. We would go back to the homestead tax credit that we've had. We would reduce or eliminate the pension tax. Now, I have a little delicate situation on that, and my wife's a retired teacher, and so the pension tax applies to us. So I'm talking about lowering a tax that I potentially may be paying. And the truth is, right now, I can afford it. So I don't need to eliminate that tax at my level. But I have a number of parishioners for whom that has become a very threatening situation, and some that are looking at retirement that feel they had made their calculations based on their pensions not being taxed, and now they don't have time to make it up. Yeah, it's a real problem. I would reinstitute, make some fairness in it so that we even be willing to look at a progressive tax, so that the people with the most resources are paying their fair share. As it stands now, well, one of the charts we saw pointed out that once you hit $300,000 in income, $330,000 in income, the last set of tax increases increased your tax $7.
Where did you see this chart?
It would be nice if I'd brought my papers in with me. I'm going to have to say I don't have it in front of me. But it did demonstrate that the people making up to $17,000 paid $120 more. People up to $30,000, a couple hundred dollars more. But that's when the inequity comes in, that the people who have the most resources have the most ability to avoid paying taxes, and we need to stop doing that. We all need to pitch in our fair share.
Does Michigan need any further restrictions or in any way revisit the medical marijuana law approved by voters in 2008?
It is going to take a lot of fine-tuning to get that right. We have a federal law that we're in conflict with. It's intriguing to me that my grandfather, who served in the State House from 1917 to 1922, one of the bills that he helped author was about not operating motor vehicles while under the influence of alcohol or stupefying drugs. Of course, God knows what a stupefying drug would be. But as we go through this thing, we'll have to come up with laws about what level of marijuana, what level of what ingredients are prohibited to operate vehicles.
And how to test for it.
Exactly. And there'll be other new test equipment will come on board as we go on, and how to police spot it. So there'll be lots of adjustments, but it's a done deal. The acceptance, prohibition isn't going to work for it any better than it did alcohol.
John Fisher, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
John Fisher is the Democratic nominee for State House in Michigan's 61st district. That includes the city of Portage and surrounding townships. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.